Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And today, we're going to talk some LeBron James. LeBron made a surprise return the last game of the homestand against Chicago. The game did not go well, but I was thrilled to see him back in action. They gave the media a little bit of an okey-doke. They were talking about, you know, LeBron being available the last three games of the year, and he came back with eight left. I think that's a huge development, D, because we saw in that game, it's just an adjustment. Austin was talking about this in post-game. Like, you just play differently when you have a guy like that out there that's going to have the ball. And we played well in his minutes. We didn't lose that game because of the minutes he played. But just getting kind of back on track requires some reps, especially with a team that has no continuity to fall back on. We'll see with D'Lo. This will be our 20th game since the trade deadline, or since the new guys got here. And there's only been one of them with both LeBron and D'Lo. So hopefully Wednesday night is that night. But talk to me, man. LeBron returns. I think it's a huge deal to kind of get some continuity before, knock on wood, a play-in game or a playoff game.
So first of all, 100% agree with all of that. Let's backtrack a second to the timeline. And
yeah.
And so this is where it's funny.
He went to the LeBron James of feet, Darius. The LeBron James of feet.
So you read the quote and it's funny enough, but you see when you see the video and him sort of wondering, am I actually going to finish this sentence? Right? Like because he said, I went to the LeBron James of, and then there's like the briefest of pauses. And
this idea of, what have I gotten myself into?
Am I really going to say? Too far now?
And like, I've gone too far now to turn back. Two, three times a pod for me, so I feel that.
So, we always talk about how LeBron, too, is super intentional with the things that he says. I think that's especially true of how he says things on Twitter, for example, because he has the ability to not hit send. And the thousands upon thousands of unsent tweets.
Yeah, where you just, like, delete
that
it.
I have.
And you're like, yeah,
where
that's
I'm
not
just
worth
like,
it.
No, not saying that. If we recall the timeline, LeBron was supposed to be reevaluated after 3 weeks with an update to come at that time. The three-week mark would have been last Thursday, and the Lakers actually gave an update on Tuesday, right? Which was the most generic of non-update updates that you could have given. He has returned to some form of on-court activities and is continuing his progression towards return to play or whatever it was, right? Which is basically just like, that could mean he's standing up and shooting free throws like we had seen him doing.
It's no indication that he's anywhere close.
Exactly. And so, but right after that, the leaks came. And it was reporter after reporter. It was Woj, it was Chris Haynes, it was Shams, it was everyone. And so it's like, you know, we're hearing LeBron is targeting a return, like, the last week of the season, like with 3 to 4 games left. It's like, okay, literally within an hour of that, LeBron is tweeting.
Yeah.
Like, I speak for myself. Sources will say whatever they want. Like, there's no timeline. There was no update. Right. And there was some sort of like, it was the team who gave the update. No. LeBron's not pushing back about what the team said, because the team didn't say anything.
That's right.
The team, in fact, LeBron, if anything, was reiterating exactly what the team said.
That's right.
Because the team specifically said there is no timeline for his return. And LeBron saying, I'll speak for myself, there's still no timeline. And it turns out there was a timeline. It just wasn't the one that he was talking about, because he was just like, apparently he's feeling better. And he's like, he went to the LeBron James feet.
He said he tore a tendon, man. And that dude's, he said he tore a tendon in his foot. Yes. How is he back?
And that dude said that you're healing like Wolverine, apparently. So he's back. So I just wanted to give that context first, because the idea there was, if you listen to the national pods, there was no optimism. If anything, it was like, well, he's doing everything he can to get back, but we'll see. And coming back this early with this much time left, could you imagine if he came back with two games left and he played the game that he did the other day, which he played fine, and we'll get into that in a second, but all of the timing stuff, all of the, like, this pass wasn't accurate, all of like, oh, AD's diving. Is this pass to AD or is it actually to the guard who's sweeping in behind him? Like, there was a lot of that stuff going on. And that's to be expected when you haven't played. And he said that post game. Just the context of time matters here. And I was super, like, I don't know. Ecstatic doesn't describe the fact that, like, they actually get however many practices they're going to have, however many shoot-arounds they're going to have, however many walk-arounds in some conference room at a hotel that they're going to have, he is going to be a part of those now in a way that he wasn't going to be able to before. And then take those ideas out onto the court with him, and he's one of the best in the world at that. The thing is just like, the thing that we just discussed, I'm going to implement that on the court.
Yes.
And be a conductor of that. There's few players in the world and in the history of the game who have been better at that than this dude. I'm holding on to that.
He's the brain and the conductor and the guy who leads the team. He's our leader. And that ability to be a part of it, especially on a team that we can so often talk about games and teams as a collection of talent rather than a cohesive team that works together. And that's such a big part of basketball, the ability to play together. There are so many actions throughout a game, literally thousands, where you do one thing and one of your teammates does something else because you did the thing that you did. And so learning the timing of all of that takes a certain amount of reps that even at this point, like I said, with about 20, 25 games left, we need to stay healthy from now till the end of the season to really have a crack at some big things. Now we're in kind of the house money territory for me, where we got a lot of talent. There's just not enough time. But if there's anybody who is able to kind of get us all on the same page, LeBron James is very high up there for exactly the reason that you were stating, D. So I actually want to start on the defensive end, though, because there were two possessions in the last game, and this is more about a leadership thing, and this isn't all on LeBron by any means, but this is just kind of an everyone thing, where we gave up points because we weren't matched up. Like, there's one out of a dead ball where two guys were guarding one guy on the perimeter. We left Zach LaVine by himself. There was a second play, and these are the types of plays, D, that, like, require a certain amount of mental focus and being locked in, that if you don't have that at this time of the season, that's actually really bad. And on a team that is such a collection of talent rather than a team that's so early in kind of their story and has no chance to get later into it, that communication is something, and that leadership from that spot defensively, I think, is going to be super important. Our guys need to talk and communicate because there's so much that they need to get on the same page on. And that level of communication is kind of the way to do that in the amount of time that we have. So LeBron on the defensive end, especially, I think a certain level of verve and communication to whatever his physical abilities are in terms of the verve, right? It's more about the concentration. That's the tough part, right? Is that I don't want LeBron going like it's game six of the NBA finals, but these are the highest stakes games of the season, right? And so threading that to me is more about like attention and leadership and a sort of like, hey, we all have to be on the same page.
100%. I don't know how much to chalk up some of that stuff to like the early game and then LeBron's return. And like, there were so many factors to go in to that. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that this is kind of what can happen.
So this is something that has been part of the character of our team. We've made a lot of mistakes throughout the whole season where it was like simple, like youth basketball type of mistakes. Like, oh, I don't know who I'm guarding type of thing, you know? And so because it's been so prevalent, if it were just a one-off in a 12:30 game on a Sunday, like that's one thing, but it's who we've been.
No, it has. And it's funny, right? Because there's literally no players that are on the roster from last season besides LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Austin Reeves. And Wenyan, right? So it's just like when you speak of like the character of the team, you know how there are times where Mike has described this a bunch, and I know that he saw this a bunch with Kobe, but I know that he sees it with LeBron as well, is that there's a certain amount of puffing out your chest that you're able to do when you have a dude as bad as that on your side. It's just like you walk into the gym with one of the best players in the world. I'm sure the Bucks feel this way. I'm like, right, where it's just like, oh, especially when that dude's like a physical marvel, and it's just like, oh no, we got this dude on our side. And that's a thing that cuts both ways, though. It can also, and to a certain extent, they've got two of those guys with Anthony Davis as well when AD is playing at like his peak level. And sometimes that allows for, when you think that you can physically outdo the guy in front of you, you don't always have the right mental locked inside, because the physical side can make up for that mental side. Right. And when you're talking about those number one overall pick level dudes, that can carry over even more, not for them necessarily, but for the people who are in their wake.
The one concern, though, is that how physically in particular, like, dominant can he be at this point, both in terms of years in his career, but also coming off of this foot injury? Like, I'm not expecting him to plant that into the ground and raise up for a dunk anytime soon.
Me neither. But I will say that when you said, hey, I want to start with defense, there was a possession that stood out to me where LeBron and AD are both in the game together, and AD is, the ball swings, I think. But basically, LeBron ends up defending a ball screen on one side of the court while AD ends up on the other side. So
is LeBron
ball
the
screen on, is on the left wing.
Is LeBron the on-ball defender?
He is not the on-ball defender.
He's the hedging
he is the guy guarding the screener.
Got it.
Yes. And he plays in a drop. And the way that the way that the ball handler went into him, and LeBron sort of like just got big and was in the drop and was just in a stance and just looked like a big dude. Mm-hmm. It made it so that the play didn't progress in a downhill manner. It's just like everything just sort of stalled. And I thought to myself, man, like there's no other wing, quote unquote, on the team that plays, that is that player defensively. Right. And so I love what Vanderbilt's been doing defensively as like this chaser and wing athlete. Obviously we know what AD does. One of the reasons why I was disappointed that Rui didn't play in the last game is that he's provided a certain amount of like on ball physicality against bigger wings mm-hmm. that like you just sort of take for granted when it's not a dude his size who is doing that.
And then it's Lonnie Walker doing it, and you're like, oh, Patrick Williams is just easily shooting over the top of this guy. Yeah.
And Wenyan is just a different type of big in a drop coverage. Like, he jabs at the ball a lot. Wenyan's the type of athlete where I feel like, man, like, if he was, instead of being 6'10", if he was, like, 6'3 or 6'4", like, he'd be, like, a great hurdler. Mm. He's very upright and angular, mm-hmm. and he's this dude who can, like, get down and then, like, explode really quickly. But guys get into his chest a little bit, and so he's, like, just sort of this long and lanky athlete. And the way that he moves is very fluid, and you're like, oh man, like look mm-hmm. at this dude just get up and down the court, and he can run so effortlessly.
He jumped a passing lane the other day where he got like the deflection and then made this like running reverse layup behind his head. Like, how did he not fall down doing that? Like, most bigs fall down doing that. And so that level of agility at the five spot in particular is super helpful.
He doesn't have that ballast where when he gets down in a stance, the way that LeBron is just like sort of this wall.
Yeah.
And dudes still do not want to attack him and go into his chest because they're not going to get any ground that way, right? And so having that on the same court as Anthony Davis with then a player like Vanderbilt who has the ability to chase, right? This is where the Lakers defense can come together. And LeBron is such a great quarterback defensively that he can be both a backline defender and an on-ball defender in a way that like only AD can do. But it's like, but AD is still on the court as well. And so it exponentially allows the Lakers to do more defensively and shut things off in a way where if LeBron is engaged and he does have just regular mobility,
yeah,
right? If he's compromised at all physically in a way where it's noticeable, and he wasn't in the last mm-hmm. game, that the Lakers are going to be fine defensively, particularly if Vanderbilt is out there too, because Vanderbilt as a big is not it. It's just
that's right. And LeBron's presence allows him to be out on the perimeter. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, he's not it, but I also completely understand why he's getting minutes at the four with LeBron out, just because of, you know, the roster that we have. But LeBron being there puts him in his strongest parts. Like I said, man, watching him go from Luka and B.I. and DeRozan the other day, that was even despite his bad
Booker?
Plus minus. Booker, he was great on Booker. Like, when we started seeing him do this, that's why I was like, this is a game changer for us, because we don't have that type of defender, and that type of defender is super valuable. But to put him out there, I'd love him every minute that he's out there to be more of a perimeter defender than a big. But to do that, you need another guy back there that can win the ground game, especially. That's where I think of with LeBron, is that he is so smart and understands the other team, what they're doing and their plays and whatnot. He can beat guys to the spot, not with his quickness, but with his anticipation. He's like, oh, I know what you're trying to do. I'm going to beat you to this spot right here and kind of blow things up. It's very Draymond-esque, right, when he's at his best defensively. And it just adds a different type of defender that also slots Vando in a great spot.
Well, he's such a physical player still mm-hmm. too, right? And so you drive into LeBron and you don't gain leverage against him, right? And so he is consistently, I've described LeBron as a driver offensively and like putting players in the sidecar, right? And he just sort of keeps them there. Well, he does the same thing defensively. When guys drive on him and they try to put the shoulder on him, mm-hmm. he'll just ride them. And like, okay. And then he has the ability to track steps with them. And then when they go up to shoot, he goes up to challenge. Mm-hmm. And they've almost got no chance to finish over the top yep. of him if they are the same size or smaller than him. And most of the guys, he is too strong that they're not able to explode towards the basket mm-hmm. against him. And it's why he gets so many blocks
yep.
on the ball that way. It's just, he's just that good. And so that winning the ground game, he can slide, and he's such a good player in terms of understanding defensive angles that it's just like, okay, well, he's going to win a lot of those. And this is where the other players need to lock in around him a little bit more, right? And this is why the guard rotation is so important to me, and who plays at guard and what is their defensive acumen and what is their ability to sort of lock in and play at the level that's needed, because it's all pieced together, Pete. And you can't have these guys on the back line and expect them to cover for everyone, because things will break down
yep.
at that point. So why don't we go to break here, and on the other side, we can talk a little bit more defense, but I do want to dive into the offensive side of the ball.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I would like to start with the starting lineup and on the offensive end in particular. This is going to be our first time, ideally. We'll see about D'Lo, right? But if he plays, D'Lo, Austin, Vanderbilt, LeBron, AD. I've been dreaming about this particular lineup in particular. I think it's our best five. And one of the things I've been talking about a lot this year is the jump shooting of LeBron and AD and what a dip that it's taken. Now, there's only so many ways you can kind of finagle your way around that. They are going to have to hit jumpers at some point for us to reach our highest level. But I think that this gives our floor in terms of jump shooting, or this puts our floor jump shooting wise so much higher, but also the ball handling on the perimeter. Because like Beasley is a better catch and shoot guy than Austin is by a fraction, I'd say. But the difference in ball handling and passing and decision making, and then defense on the other end, I just think is a massive difference. And so I see a lot of guys that can break down a defense and create advantage and enough to kind of make up for the lack of jump shooting from both Vanderbilt, but also the dipping numbers in that respect of LeBron and AD. And so I'm super excited to watch that five in particular. What are your thoughts on them?
This is where D'Lo is so important. If you have Dennis as the starter next to Austin, and it's this same exact group, I think they could still be successful offensively. But I think that you're going to see that one extra defender who is going to be in the paint and not a guy who is a high level enough shooter to punish it consistently.
Yeah, you're okay with Dennis Schroeder jumpers if you're the defensive coach.
Yes. And so one of the things that I've liked about D'Lo is that he has shown a great amount of comfort level as an off-ball player. And in fact, he has been morphing more and more into an off-ball player as Austin's on-ball reps have gone up. Mm-hmm. And when the Lakers go to their three-guard lineup with Dennis, Austin, and D'Lo, it's rarely D'Lo that is bringing the ball mm-hmm. up. It's almost always Austin. It's like probably like 60% Austin and then like 25 mm-hmm. Dennis and then like 15 D'Lo in terms of the player who starts the possession with the ball.
And that trio, that three-guard lineup has been the one three-guard lineup that we've had that's been killer. It's like a plus 30 and over in terms of net rating in about 100 minutes.
Yeah, because the three guys that can run a screen and roll, Dennis is in the corner and Dennis is a baseline player. Mm-hmm. He is a baseline player. And so it's just like, he's not the same sort of player at all, but it reminds me of like how Rip Hamilton almost always just stayed along the baseline mm-hmm. and he just
ran around screens.
Baseline the entire game, like Mr. Floppy, right? Freaking always running floppy actions. So Dennis can shoot the corner three, but when he drives, he loves to rack baseline every single time. Doesn't matter if he's going left or going right, he's going baseline. And so when you have those two guards up high in Austin and D'Lo, right? This allows you to play two-sided action, and D'Lo in particular can space on opposite side while strong side action is going on and be a threat.
Oh, yeah.
Both to hit the three or come off screen actions to curl into the lane and then run second side pick and roll action. And I am, I think, most excited about that prospect of having three pick and roll ball handlers on the court in terms of LeBron now instead of Dennis, with Austin and D'Lo have three screening options in AD, LeBron, and Vanderbilt, and all of the different combinations within that, and then have Austin and D'Lo as shooters, and there's no one on the court that can't do everything that you want to do offensively. Even Vanderbilt will space to the corner and shoot the corner three if he has to, but he's a good screener. He's a good cutter. And he just understands like how to screen backside as well. So there's a lot to like offensively with this group. And LeBron can unlock a lot of this because of his passing as well.
Yeah, he brings certain attributes to the table that no one else does, even amongst talented on-ball players. And he really brings that force element off of the dribble. There's nobody else. D'Lo can do this to guards of a certain size for sure. But our guys are generally not the sidecar guys, right? Where you get a head and shoulder past them and they kind of seal that guy on their side because of their superior strength and physicality. That's not D'Lo's game. It's not Austin's game. It's not Dennis's game. And so to have that as one of your on-ball options from the perimeter in particular is super important, right? And against certain matchups, that's going to be helpful. But in the Bulls game, we saw LeBron in the post a lot, right? Because they had Alex Caruso on him quite a bit. And I thought we saw some kind of flickers of quality play off of that, that I think can help AD and then the shooters and the kind of the cutters off of Bron. It just gives us a different look. Like, I wish we had more games because I think that the fully realized version of this team is kind of this cool zig when everybody else is zagging type of team where you've got two players that you can run a lot of offense through the post in, and then multiple players, LeBron, AD, Rui, Dennis, Austin, who are really good in mid-range. D'Lo, right? We've got a lot of guys who are good mid-range shooters, like unusually so. And so defenses aren't particularly designed to be great against that part of the court. And so I just wish we had more time to kind of fully realize this. But talk to me a little bit about LeBron in the post, because I think that that's something, obviously I've been barking up this tree all year long, but I do think it's something that with this team, and we talked about the offense swirling around AD with these shooters and guys who can get open and knock down shots. You can do the same with LeBron, who's really one of the best passers ever at that and finding those guys. So I think there's a lot of exciting stuff there.
At this stage of his career, he is a post player as much as anything else, right? There was a part of his career where he was almost always a perimeter driver. And then if guys went under screens on him, then he had to evolve to become a jump shooter. But then when he went to Miami and he played basically power forward a lot more offensively, then he went to the post more and more and more. Right. And at this stage of his career, he does way more big man stuff in terms of screening, like on ball screening and then diving into post ups. Remember, the last game he played before this Bulls game was the game against the Mavs. And he took over down the stretch of that game almost all from the post. And so he was just overpowering a small Mavs team that didn't really have a wing defender to put on him. It's just like, oh, here's Reggie Bullock. And right, like, and he was just backing these dudes down and finishing in the paint with like step throughs and little turnaround jumpers and power finishes off of drop steps. And this is what he can do against so many opponents. I actually hope that it reshapes the offense a little bit, because what's clear to me is that the offense isn't going to reshape itself just based off of what Anthony Davis does.
Right.
Right. It's just like AD is not the guy that you're going to be like, oh, well, we're going to post him 20 times a game.
And this is something too, that like around the league for at least a couple of decades, like getting the ball to your big, if your dominant player on the court is a big, it's a little more complicated to get shots when the defense is geared up to stop that guy. This isn't something that's necessarily unique to our team.
No, it's not. And Embiid is also one of those guys where as great as he is, his touches now come more and more late in late games off of like pick and slot pop type of plays where he's getting the ball at the elbow or further out. Or it's Harden creating out of a pick and roll where that's why their ceiling is going to be so much more dependent on what Harden can do and what Maxey can do as ball handlers versus like obviously Embiid is a dominant player. But the interesting thing about LeBron is that he is not posting against bigs.
Right.
Right. He is posting against smaller dudes. And so those entry passes are easier. And then he has the ability to then play out of the post in ways that will open up all of these weak side actions. And he is such a good passer that he will pick guys out in ways that are going to benefit the team a lot more, right? And so we had a long discussion about Beasley the last pod, but I honestly think Beasley and Vanderbilt can be the biggest beneficiaries of LeBron's return offensively, right? Because of their cutting and shooting and the screen actions that work around LeBron. He has worked best with guys just like this over the course of his career. So I am thrilled to get LeBron back as a post player. And also too, like, this is where, just like we talked about having second side actions in terms of like ball handlers who can be pick and roll threats, having two post players on each side of the ball or on each side of the court is super helpful as well, right? So you can duck in from either corner with LeBron or AD, or that duck in from the opposite dunker spot to get offensive rebounding position. Those are all things that are going to help the Lakers in the bigger picture. Then that leads to transition defense questions and a lot of stuff, right? But LeBron in the post, it's going to be a great equalizer and a good slowdown option for this team's offense when they haven't had that specific thing. And it's just like they've just been overly dependent on the guard shot creation, I think.
That's something, too, where he's a little bit different in terms of how he posts up than AD, because AD is such a high center of gravity guy. You were talking about that play that you remembered where he didn't duck in. He doesn't do that a ton, and he doesn't win a lot of like low to the ground type of plays offensively. He's a guy that's going to catch and face up and beat you off of the dribble, or catch and drop step off of it, or shoot a floater going middle. But LeBron's really the guy who, oh, you switched a small guy onto me, like I'm going to use a post seal and just impeccable technique. Yeah. And I'm going to drive you into the ground. Basically, I'm going to push you all the way under the basket on this post seal. And so that whole like ground game versus aerial game idea, to me, like LeBron's more of the ground post up player, whereas AD's more of the aerial over the top type of guy. And I think that it's going to be super helpful to have two guys that kind of go about it in a different way in that respect. That said, though, I keep going back to the jump shooting, man. Like, I think this is kind of the basis.
Yeah.
This is the foundation of where we should play through, and that along with the pick and roll type stuff. I don't want to get away from what we've done this year, right? In terms of guard play, it's just LeBron, I think, brings the action more into the post and gives you another reliable look right there. But yeah, in terms of, that's going to collapse the defense in ways. It's a way of getting penetration that's not off of the dribble. Are you in a similar spot to me on the jump shooting thing? Because that's something that I can't think of a star duo around the NBA that is a worse jump shooting pair at this point than LeBron and AD. And that's like made up to a degree for the pressure that they put on the rim. But like AD, for example, we called the play game two of the 2020 Western Conference Finals. We called the play to get him a three on the move, and he drilled that to win the game, right? And so it's just this like missing aspect to me that puts the rest of it together, that I just love to hear your more in-depth thoughts on the jump shooting of our stars, because it's something I've been concerned about all year.
Well, yeah, there's a reason that you're concerned. And I think that regardless of what the numbers say, the players tell you what their comfort level is around any aspect of their individual game, right? And so there were stretches during the season where LeBron was taking 8-9 threes a game, and you knew that's when he was confident in his jumper. His jumper stopped falling, and then suddenly that's – not suddenly, but gradually over the stretch of a couple of weeks, it's, okay, well, that's 6.5 threes a game. Like, oh, that's 5 threes a game. That's 4.5 threes a game. And it's just like, okay, well, he's clearly not as confident with this three-point shot right now. And
well, you see him pump fake sometimes. Like, he'll have open looks, and he'll like kind of give that first double clutch, right? And it's a break rhythm type of three where it's obvious he doesn't really want to take that shot. Because when I've seen him get those shots plenty of times over the years where he's like, oh, hell yeah, this pick and pop open three, I'm going to – this is an easy shot for me. And he doesn't seem to like it.
No, so, and this is where, too, it's just like, I wonder, some of this is, I'm not blaming this on the coaches, but like, what are the coaches emphasizing and what are they preaching? Because the things that you preach often come at expense of like something else. And if you're repeatedly told to attack the basket, then odds are that means that there's probably less confidence in your ability to hit the outside shot, right? And then if you combine that with an individual player's sort of own shakiness with their own jumper, then that leads to situations where, well, this guy is not shooting any threes at all. It goes back to that comment that you said that Frank Vogel had in AD's first season, where he's just like, you know, well, no, I would want this guy shooting three or four of these a game. Mm-hmm. And it's more like, I believe in you, keep shooting these. It's clear the guards have the green light to shoot the three whenever they want. Like, we've got it on tape with Darvin talking to Beasley, like, no, man, this is what you do. I think LeBron and AD need to get back to showing confidence that they're going to take and make that three. I like when AD shoots the three ball. I like it especially when it comes within the context of an overall package of his offense, mm-hmm. though.
It's a side dish for sure. It should never be the main thing, but if it's not available at all, I think that's harmful in a way where it just makes him way easier to guard.
It's always about striking the right balance, mm-hmm. though, right? And so the side dish, that's the perfect way to describe it to me. It's just like, well, you need some of that on your plate because it helps balance out the rest of the meal, right? If they're not taking it, and this is especially true for LeBron because LeBron is still a perimeter player, mm-hmm. too. If AD is going to play forward and he's not, basically,
right,
then like I think he really needs to have this as part of his arsenal. When he is in this four out, one in system, like I think it needs to be a part of things. But if he's, I think the way I could describe it is with LeBron back in the mix, with him and D'Lo and Austin, and then Dennis as the fourth ball handler, I have enough confidence in the decision making of the four main ball handlers that if AD is screening and rolling almost all of the time, I feel pretty comfortable with like whatever the outcome of the play is going to be, if that makes sense.
It does. But do you think he should be picking and popping? Because we've seen a lot of defenses collapsing into the paint. We'll see it against Chicago on Wednesday. To me, those are the times where like take a couple of those. Instead of roll to the basket, pop out behind the line. They're going to be way off you. It's a practice jumper. That's how you get that side dish on the plate.
So here's an interesting question. So, yes, I do think that he should be picking and popping. I also think that one of the things we've seen less of with D'Lo out is teams icing screen and rolls with AD on the court.
Oh, that's a good observation. Yeah.
Because one of the things that you try to do in order to not have to go over the top of a screen, mm-hmm. when you have a pull-up jump shooter is to ice the ball screen.
So
right?
This is when the ball's on the side of the court, like free throw line and below, and the guard ball handler, instead of really defending the guy with the ball, he's going to be like, we're not going to let you go middle. That's what icing a screen is, if you're not familiar with the term. And so of that ilk, we've run a lot of side ball screens like that. That's a way that teams will like to defend that. So what's the impact of that on AD?
In terms of his jump shooting, when you ice the ball screen, the natural shot off of that is the pop. It is the jumper,
right?
Because the pass that's open is the pocket pass to the guy who's sitting literally in the pocket, which is going to be around the elbow area.
And you also have, because the defensive player that's guarding the ball handler is not right in front of them, you need the big to be the person that's right between the ball handler and the basket. Because if you have the ball handler off to the side preventing middle and the big doesn't hedge, it's just a straight line drive to the basket. So the defensive big is occupied in the paint, in the interior, or close to it at least, in ways that where that shot you're talking about is wide open.
Yes. And so one of the things that I, and this is just a hunch of mine, but this is where I'm at, is that that shot being the shot that's open makes it very easy for AD to like not have to like pop, but it's just like this is the symmetry of the play. My guess is that AD is being told to roll, right, on most screens. And if he's popping, because the only big that generally pops is Bamba, and when Bamba pops, he pops all the way out to be on the three-point line. And if AD, this is where AD's confidence in his own three, it's just like, should I be shooting the three or should I be going to the basket? And this for whatever reason, he's like, I should be going to the basket more. And so would you want, do you want AD popping to 18 or 20 feet? I remember in like his first couple of seasons, you were just like, he needs to pop to the 3-point line because that's the shot. Like, I don't want him taking 20 footers. And so would it be progress to you if he starts to pick and pop, but he's popping to 16 feet to 18 feet and that's the open shot?
Strong yes, because we got to stop having 8 shot attempt nights for Anthony Davis. And that's one of the ways to add to that. Like, I want it at 18 rather than 8. And a lot of times when teams are collapsed into the paint, that's the open shot. But also, if he doesn't want that particular shot on that pop, you could just flow into a handoff with the guy that's next to you on the other side of the court.
Yes.
And what you're doing in that is that since, for example, the ice that you described, if the defense is back there and you go to the pop, but AD doesn't want the shot and it flows, say to D'Lo or say LeBron right there, all of a sudden, all of the defensive attention is back there and you've got a 2-on-1 up top where AD's setting the screen on a handoff. We run these handoffs all the time. So it's been super fun to get into the nitty gritty of all this with you. We got to wrap up. We will be back tomorrow to preview the game against Chicago, our second one. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score. 2-1.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.